Yeah, they adapted to the incidents in their 3D life that they don't know isn't 3D. That's the user is content. All media, the user is the content. And so the Android meme satirizes the user is content phenomenon because in the end, there's no content that a user can figure out. There's no meaning. So that's the Armageddon for people's minds. William Irwin Thompson says, in our time, mind is gone. You can't have mental meaning, and that's the starting point of ION. The labyrinth of your mind will not serve you.
Do you think that's what they meant when they said it would end in the Thompson Quadrant? I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's an ongoing question. I ask ION occasionally, but what do you mean by that? One of the ways I took it, I said, Thompson's the only one who talks about a mass death. And that's a theme that no public intellectuals talk about. But he predicted mass death, and that's going to happen, he says. And that's the closest of what ION says that I can see in any of these guys, any of the holy offices. And Thompson ends up to be the one who gets the credit for it. So we end up obliterated in the Thompson Quadrant because he predicted the mass death. That's it. That's all I get now so far. Also, traditionally, it's also got Krishnamurti in there, and it's dealing with astral bodies and the occult, and people could project that on ION. That Thompson, he comes up, he talks about angels, he talks about certain cultural renaissances happening because an angel has sort of sat there, a huge angel, and affected people like McLuhan says a medium would affect people. So he's the closest to wacky ION ideas or the mystery landscape. But ION does not like Thompson. Not like Thompson.
And why did they and say, Thompson, I wanted to ask them why they said Croker shouldn't even be in there.
Oh, he's got different positions depending on what position we are at. It's always shifting.
Yeah.
You know, Croker, he says we haven't gotten to Croker yet. He said that. And that would be advanced Android meme stuff.
Right.
Applied to the mystery landscape. Thompson is similar.
Maybe Chad's code will usher in the Croker Quadrant.
I don't know. Maybe. LaRouche is only relevant for obsolete politics and whether the Queen's going to put us in a FEMA camp or not. That's pretty limited. McLuhan's pretty limited. So, you know, it's interesting how ION came up with the Quaker Quadrant. Not Croker, but Quaker is the one that either is a result of the merging of the 4 and 5, or he wants Dobbs to do more of the Dobbs Quadrant. Not sure. He certainly told me that the tiny note chart will become way more complicated. Hasn't even really been developed yet. So, are you there,
Whoa.
Katie? What's the next thing? What was the book or
something? What about the Zappa essay on composition?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I have that. Yeah, we're going to do the Zappa essay. Okay, just a second. Someone else say something while I do something here.
I'll just set this up. So I was reading a book on Rheingold, and he mentioned something else. So I went down a rabbit hole. In this book. I didn't want to buy the book because I didn't care about the rest of it. But Bob bought it. So he's going to read this essay. And I was wondering if it really said something profound or if Zappa just wrote an essay to put in this book because they paid him. That's what I wondered.
Well, the book was made after Zappa died. And the book's a ripoff.
Okay.
But that's okay. I buy lots of books for tax purposes, so it's not a waste for me. And I'm glad
sure it was a
this.
Penny used on Amazon. You paid for them to ship it to you, right? I mean, it couldn't have cost more than $15.
Yeah, what was your opening statement? What's Amazon got to do with it?
What did I had a couple copies for like a penny on Amazon. I don't think it was bestseller anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not. It's no big deal. We want the books to be expensive. I buy $100 books just for the expenses. Yeah, we get big special books. So this is called Creators on Creating, subtitled Awakening and Cultivating the Imaginative Mind. And it looks like most of it is just clipped from their writings. So I haven't read everything, but when you get to Zappa, it's short. And, well, look at this. There's some Muriel Rukeyser. Her title of her thing is The Genesis of Orpheus. Well, I'd be interested in that because Orpheus is a big part of the tiny note chart.
Yeah.
So, going forward to Zappa. So he's item 33. That's a good number. Or relevant, sort of, within ratios of non-significance. So there's 39 people. Zappa is in six sections, 39 people, and so part one is the uncovered heart, that's got six people. Part two is the opened mind, that's got six people. Part three, the web of imagination, has got seven people. Part four, the creative ecology, has got eight people. Part five, the dedication to mastery, that's the Zappa goes under, the dedication to mastery. And then part six is the courage to go naked with five people. So most of them I've heard of. I don't know if you have heard of all of them or many of them. But so here's what they did with Zappa. They just took his autobiography and collaged together different parts of what he wrote. And Zappa is one of the few people in the book that they have the full life. They got his dates. Many other people were still alive. And this book came out in 1997, and Zappa's book came out in 1989. So here's what it says. It's titled All About Music. And it says, in this essay, musician and composer Frank Zappa describes his understanding of the process of composition. Despite his obvious genius and his rather facile description of the compositional process, Zappa insisted on reminding people that what he was doing might look like fun, and in fact was fun, but was also hard work. Furthermore, he also asked his audience to do a little bit of work, as opposed to just settling for those tried and trusted familiar sounds. Question authority, he shouted, but think, and think for yourself. Furthermore, he also asked his audience to do a little bit of work, as opposed to just settling for those tried and trusted familiar sounds. So, I guess he was trying to have the ear rehearse itself. Here's Madeline. We'll unmute Madeline. Maybe she's got something to say. So it starts off, the first thing is titled, and I assume these are titles from Zappa's book. I didn't look up Zappa's book. It says, what do you do for a living, Dad? So Zappa says, if any of my kids ever asked me that question, the answer would have to be, quote, what I do is composition, do in italics. What I do is composition. I just happen to use material other than notes for the pieces. And notes is in italics. Composition is a process of organization very much like architecture. As long as you can conceptualize what that organizational process is, you can be a composer, and he's composer in quotation marks, hyphen, in any medium you want. You can be a video composer, a film composer, a choreography composer, a social engineering composer, whatever. Just give me some stuff in italics, and I'll organize it for you. That's what I do. Then he has his own term called project object. Project object is a term I've used to describe the overall concept of my work in various mediums. Note, he has that mistake of making mediums in the plural. Media in the plural becomes mediums. It should be media. Or maybe that's a British-Canadian thing. I don't know. But I see people occasionally use mediums as plural, but I would say media. So project object is a term I've used to describe the overall concept of my work in various mediums. Each project, in brackets, in whatever realm, or interview connected to it. So each project or interview connected to it is part of a larger object for which there is no technical name. Technical name in quotes. There's no name for this larger object. That's what we were talking about. You can't name what you're trying to do here in this situation. Can't name the Android meme. That's Rumpelstiltskin, right? Can't name Rumpelstiltskin. You don't know his name. Don't know how to name him. You don't know where to go to hear him say his name. Think of the connecting emphasis. Think of the connecting material in the project object this way. And he has a colon. A novelist invents a character. If the character is a good one, he takes on a life of his own. Why should he get to go to only one party? He could pop up any time in a future novel. So Zappa is saying his ongoing work is one big album, and characters can show up in different albums. Or, then he says, or, Rembrandt got his look, look in quotes, by mixing just a little brown into every other color. He didn't do red unless it had brown in it. The brown itself wasn't especially fascinating, but the result of its obsessive inclusion was that look, look in quotes. In the case of the project object, you may find a little poodle over here, a little blowjob over there, etc., etc. I am not obsessed by poodles or blowjobs, however. These words, and others of equal significance, along with pictorial images and melodic themes, recur throughout the albums, interviews, films, videos, and this book, meaning his own autobiography, for no other reason than to unify the collection. So he's trying to unify what Lynch doesn't try to unify, unless you know that Lynch is talking about the Android meme, and that's the unifying factor. It's not the content of the movie. But Zappa admits that he's trying to unify the collection in a way by having a repeat mode. So then the next part of the little essay is called The Frame. And he says, the most important thing in art is the frame, and that's capital T, capital F. For painting, literally, So the most important thing in art is the frame. For painting, literally. For other arts, figuratively, because without this humble appliance, you can't know in the italics, where the art stops and the real world begins. You have to put a box around it, because otherwise, what is that shit on the wall? If John Cage, for instance, says, quote, I'm putting a contact microphone on my throat, I'm going to drink carrot juice, and that's my composition, then his gurgling qualifies as his composition because he put a frame around it and said so. Quote, take it or leave it, I now will this to be music. I now will this to be music, unquote. After that, it's a matter of taste. Without the frame as announced, it's a guy swallowing carrot juice. So if music is the best, what is music? Anything can be music, but it doesn't become music until someone wills it to be music, and the audience listening to it decides to perceive it as music. So then Frank says, most people can't deal with that abstraction, or don't want to. They say, quote, give me the tune. Do I like this tune? Does it sound like another tune that I like? The more familiar it is, the better I like it. Hear those three notes there? Those are the three notes I can sing along with. I like those notes very, very much. Give me a beat. Not a fancy one. Give me a good beat. Something I can dance to. It has to go boom, bap, boom, bap, bap. If it doesn't, I will hate it very, very much. Also, I want it right away. And then write me some more songs like that, over and over and over again, because I'm really into music. So that's his Menippean satire, sort of the reader or of anything, in the section called The Frame. So then the third part is called Why Bother? So he says, I used to love putting little black dots on music paper. I'd sit for 16 hours at a time, hunched over in a chair with a bottle of India ink, and draw beams and dots. You know, musical annotation. No other activity could have enticed me away from the table. I'd maybe get up for coffee or to eat, but other than that, I was glued to the chair for weeks and months on end writing music. I thought it was fun, because I could hear everything in my head, and I kept telling myself how thoroughly bitchin' it was, or how thoroughly good. To be able to write a piece of music and hear it in your head is a completely different sensation from the ordinary listening experience. Then he says, I don't write music on paper anymore, music on paper in quotes. I don't write music on paper anymore. The incentive to continue was removed by having to deal with symphony orchestras. And that's when he started composing on the synclavier. Right? Didn't have to deal with humans anymore. So then the last part, so it's only four parts. What do you do for a living dead? The frame, why bother? And the fourth part says, let's all be composers. And he's got all underlined. So he writes, a composer is a guy who goes around forcing his will on unsuspecting air molecules, often with the assistance of unsuspecting musicians. Want to be a composer? You don't even have to be able to write it down. The stuff that gets written down is only a recipe, remember. like the stuff in Ronnie Williams' Matcha Book. That's one of his childhood buddies, who I guess, I don't know what the Matcha Book is right off. Let's look it up. So the stuff that gets written down is only a recipe, remember, like the stuff in Ronnie Williams' Matcha Book. That's capital M-A-C-H-A, all capital letters. If you can think design, you can execute design. It's only a bunch of air molecules. Who's going to check up on you? It's only a bunch of air molecules. Who's going to check up on you? So then he says, just follow these simple instructions. One, declare your intention to create a composition, composition in quotes. Two, start a piece at some time. Start a piece at some time. Three, cause something to happen over a period of time. In brackets, it doesn't matter what happens in your time hole, in quotes. We have critics to tell us whether it's any good or not, so we don't worry about that part. Four, end the piece at some time, in brackets, or keep it going, telling the audience it is a work in progress, in quotes. Five, get a part-time job so you can continue to do stuff like this. Get a part-time job so you can continue to, you know, compose. And that's all we get.
I thought that was great.
All right, good.
I loved it. Well, I'm so surprised how much I loved it.
All right, so Frank presented all these other people. I didn't look at everything, but some of them are interviews, some of them are stories, it seems, or essays, and it's all done in one kind of typing text. In Zappa's statement, like in his book, different words are italicized or darkened. There's all kinds of multiple levels indicated. You know what I mean? Visually, by the fonts, by the text.
Yeah. I wish you'd take a
it's
copy
almost like
of that
a children's
and post it.
Yeah, maybe I can do that. It's almost
yeah.
like a children's book. You know, it's written,
mm-hmm.
So everything is pointed out to you.
Mm-hmm. I got the impression
okay.
that him sitting down and composing was kind of like a game, like an early synthesis, because he was hearing it all in his head and he was notating it in front of him, and it would be kind of like Nintendo before it happened, before it came, you know, before it was invented.
Well, what I'm interested in is he's got music happening all the time in his head. He's channeling. Something is activated.
Yeah.
His inner ear. I don't have music at all in my head, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I got ideas happening all the time, so maybe that's my
that's
way of doing
version.
It. But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it must be fun to have all this music happening, and it's just flowing through him, and he could just write it down. So I don't know if that's a game. I don't think it's a game. He's just recording. He's just translating it to be played.
But he can play,
so he can
but he can play with it, because... You know, it's a way that as he's, like, dashing and dotting, which are these really, like, simple sort of,
yeah.
like when you punch a button in a Nintendo game or something, you know. And obviously somebody on the Nintendo game isn't creating the game as they're playing it, but they are kind of in a way. But, yeah, his is more sophisticated, but it was cool to imagine him sitting, hearing this amazing music no one else can hear, totally within the mind. And yet he's able to, you know, symbolically put it out on paper in these little dashes and stuff. It's a little funny little image.
Okay, now, in 200 Motels, which is autobiographical, he has Ringo Starr playing Frank. I think he's more like a dwarf. He's the dwarf Frank Zappa. And you don't see the actual Frank Zappa in the movie, not at all, usually. You might see some footage of him playing great guitar, or he's standing there observing. Footage of him observing or watching. That's all you get of the literal Frank. So you got Ringo Starr being Frank Zappa. So on the road, 200 Motels, endless on the road rock life, he's in a hotel at his desk, and he's got his classical music paper laid out there. And okay, so he's going to show us something about his composing technique. So he's not listening to music in his head. He's listening to the radio. And he goes, ah, and he scribbles it down. So it looks like he's ripping off tunes on the radio or using the content that's in the environment, the given environment, and mutating into his music, you know. But he's using something externally, not thinking. It's not coming. This is not showing him coming to the brain. So he's listening to the radio, And he goes, you hear a little music, and he goes, and he starts writing it down. And after he scribbles it, he takes a cup of coffee and spills the coffee up in the musical paper. And then mushes the coffee into what he just wrote. He makes a mess. That's interesting, eh? That's what he's showing, what he's doing. Remember he said in this thing he doesn't use notes. What'd he say? I just happen to use material other than notes for his compositions. So he starts off writing notes, but then he mixes it.
Yeah, that's great.
Like it's like a Jackson Pollock painting or modern abstract art. He mixes up the ingredients, or he throws in some newspaper clippings. But he writes his stuff down that he rips off from the radio, and he says in other interviews that he doesn't listen to pop music, but he's showing himself listening to pop music and stealing from it or getting ideas, okay, there's a cliche riff, I'm going to mutate that. And, occasionally you will hear him. It's not that often in the 80s. You'd get a riff from Boy George or something that he'd tweak or do something with. But just be a little fragment. But it's so interesting that he then writes it out, and then he pours coffee on it, and then rubs the coffee all over the paper. That's like a little kid playing with feces.
That's like tactility, like pushing away the...
Yeah, tactile.
The old,
So
that's cool. I
want to
see that. Is that something I can watch?
Gail's very strict. I don't think, the late Gail Zappa, I don't think you can get 2 minute motels. Maybe. Someone's got a computer, check it.
There's
fragments.
Right?
Beg your pardon?
You were reading the script, right?
Once, yeah. You mean now or?
No.
6 months ago.
Yeah, like on the Zappa thing.
There are fragments of, there are parts of 200 Motels, and I looked for the Ringo part and I couldn't find it. As I wanted people to hear it and say it, but for some reason it's not there. But it might be online. Katie, are you looking? Is it online, 200 Motels?
Just today I was watching A Day in Zappa's Life.
No, I moved away from the computer.
And they show him, in his basement working on it, like with the film. And that's kind of cool. I just watched that today and now.
Well, wait a minute. Is it black and white? Has he got
no
shirt on?
The day the segment that I watched, or the film that he's working on?
Working on? Who's working on it?
Zappa is working on a film, and there's film footage of him working on it in his studio talking about it, and I think it's 200 Motels, but it doesn't look like it's black and white. He says, we finally got a decent budget for a feature film.
I'll have to look that up. So that's on YouTube under what title?
Yeah,
Zappa?
Day in the Life with Zappa. I had it up just earlier today. I can send it over to you, or you can find it. It's like a German, there's German subtitles, I think.
Right.
It might not be German, but yeah. It's
because
like,
there's a documentary done by
your team. I think it's a Dutch documentary.
Oh, it's Dutch. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
I think it's a Dutch documentary. I saw it a few years ago.
Yeah, that's 1971. It starts off, it has Frank Zappa, the blue background, camera, Peter Boysen, Gulu Genrap, Dutch names. Yeah, the two-story 200 Motels. This is definitely, this is the one I'm going to show him walking around without a shirt on in his home. This is the home that is, we were there in March 1970. He just moved. Yeah, it shows him walking out. It's in color, though. And
I've seen that one.
Yeah, that's 1971. That's the home, Woodrow Wilson Drive, at the beginning. He has the major renovation doesn't happen until 7 years later. And so this is basic basement where Nige Lennon, you can read her book, Being Frank, where she was crashing with him and Gail was pissed off upstairs. And Dave Wally comes and interviews her. Interviews Zappa in August 71, and that's that. But then when her book comes out in the 90s, he says, I remember a young woman there. And he went and listened to one of his old recordings of Zappa back in 71, and on it, this young woman comes in and says something to Frank. So David Wally paid no attention to it then, but now this whole story of his mistress, Wally, has it on tape. If you don't believe Nigel Lennon, she made it up. Well, Dave Wally can prove it because he's got her talking to Frank right there in the summer of 71. And that's also when we were there with Motorhead one night. We were there the night that he was closing Fillmore East with John Lennon and Yoko. And then they and they've been to England already and made the movie. That's like in February, March 71. I'm there in June 71. Carolyn is there. And then we go out and visit Beefheart and Ben Lomond up in the Redwood area. He's mad that anybody's even writing a book about Zappa. He says Zappa's not an artist. He's a good technician, but he's not worth writing about. So that's when Beefheart is mad at Frank for promoting Trout Mask Replica and associating it with Wildman Fisher and Alice Cooper. Beefheart did not want to be lumped in with them, so he had a little petty grievance there. And so then what else? So then Zappa, a few months later, you know, gets thrown off the stage. Just like a week or two after the movie's premiered, he gets thrown off stage and almost killed. So it was quite an active year. And this documentary is showing that year just before the accident. So it's a good document of what's happening to Frank and the end of an era in his life. Okay? Is that enough detail for you?
That's great.
You'll see Little Moon Unit and Dweezil, babies. You'll see little shots of the babies there, I think, at some point in the movie. So what was interesting is that the Europeans were the only ones interested in Frank. And around that time, Frank's interviewed, and he says, I'm trying to start a movement or do something on a bigger scale. I don't like the fact that I'm censored, and I'm not just making this for a bunch of aesthetes in Europe. He puts it down. I'm not just doing this for a bunch of jazz aesthetes in Europe. You know, he's running for president. He doesn't say it there, but he said it other places. So it's fun hearing what he says and what he leaves out. And that's that quote I just read you. The ongoing project object, so it's a process and a goal, both and depending
object,
on what's
great.
Happened. Yeah. So depending on what's going on determines what he will highlight. And when I talked to him in March 1970, that was we went up there and Adrian Ainsley Dunbar, while we're waiting for Frank to show up on the front steps, there was only the GTOs who Little Sarah Loves, the little GTOs. They were inside babysitting the kids. And Ainsley Dunbar plays his single 100 fucking times, over and over and over, trying to drive us crazy, trying to drive us away. I assume that was his motive, unless he was taking heroin and nodding out, and the thing just went on and on and on. But back then, you have to put the record back on. You know, it's a little armature. So when Frank shows up, I had a question for him. I said, what you're doing in your albums and what you're laying out to us, is that all preconceived and designed for certain situations? Now, that's the idea I meant. I don't know how I said it, because I didn't really know what I was talking about. But I had a sense that he was really doing what McLuhan was saying. You know, the real artist puts out effects for certain impact. Totally manipulated, totally... Okay, you think this is a story about this and that, but there's actually a bunch of other stuff going on that you don't know about. So it's a kind of magic or a kind of alchemy or a kind of advertising with subliminals. So I asked him, are you doing something in here that means you planned it 2 years before and it gets released now because of the plan? And he says, no. He says, no. Well, a year later, and maybe even less than that, He releases the interview, the really good interview. Chad's probably read it. Hey, Snazzy Execs, I think it's called, where he explains his project object and conceptual continuity and everything that I suspected he says he was doing.
Yeah.
So here's how I take that. He isn't ready to talk about it when I say it, but because he's a thermometer, the effects on his crowd, his fans. show up. And so because I indicated an awareness beginning to see that he was doing that, that meant to him, it's time to reveal it. I've been given a hint that people are starting to notice it. You know what I mean? See, mm-hmm. Because I indicated to him that we're starting to see something like that, he knew he had to release it. He had to sort of talk about it, which will further muddy the waters. So he's always creating a new environment. So that environment, that idea was obsolete, so he could release it. That was my personal
sure.
theory. I never got a chance.
You were
to
his rearview mirror.
Yeah, I was his echo. Or I was his... Yeah. He says around... It's interesting, around a few months later, this is March 1970, so late 70, he does an interview, and it's something like, there's somebody out there who's getting off on this, what I'm doing, beyond their wildest comprehensions. he's getting off on it beyond their wildest comprehensions. Well, that definitely would reply to me, because I knew him and I was talking to him and was up on it and giving him information, but I don't know how much he had me in mind, but he knew there was somebody out there really getting off on it. And then, so getting off on it because it's going to be ionic, but that wouldn't be within my comprehension. What other point there? Beyond their wildest comprehensions. And then he says, but my job is, as they go out there, you know, following my art and getting beyond their comprehensions, it's my job to bring them back. That's what he said. My job is to reel them back in, to get them back to reality. Because remember, he's saying, after all this crazy stuff, he's trying to get people to get to be rational and practical again. So it's exactly what McLuhan's saying. You got all these environments making you think that this and that is happening, and we want you to see through those environments. But we're going to have to go through some pretty weird procedures to be effective in communicating what you really should be getting out of this. And Ian does the same thing. He's looking at a million Elisas, and he's got to figure out which one he's going to address now, and he's got to get Elisa to hear this, so he's going to use all kinds of different weirdnesses of communication styles to prod you. And
yeah.
That's what McLuhan did.
Yeah, that's great.
Like someone in this play that this woman did on him in 94, I saw it in New York City, she has this great line. It might be from... Philip Marchand's first biography of McLuhan, he is known to have said, somebody, you know, yells at him from the audience, says, that's a bunch of crap. And McLuhan says, you don't like that idea? Well, I got a lot of others. How would he say it?
More with that.
No, he didn't say more with that again. I got a lot of others, or a lot of others, or I got many others. So that's what he said. You don't like that idea? Well, stick around. I got a bunch of other different kind of ideas.
We're going to teach you so many ways you're bound to like some of them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And
yeah, don't think I'm a dead.
People wouldn't have said that back then. Like, people weren't into having a bunch of ideas as much back then, right? Like, the narrative was more like, you've got your thing and you do it.
Nobody did what McLuhan did. Nobody said, I don't pretend to understand my stuff. It's very difficult. No one ever fucking said that. Admitted they didn't understand.
So charming. So charming.
Yeah. Another great line. I don't know what I think until I say it. What the fuck's that mean? You know, back then, it was a simple time compared to now. Like, these are very avant-garde statements by a public guy who's supposedly being wise. He's acting like a fucking nut, right? Talking like a nut. He definitely broke the mold for what a public intellectual would say and do. He says in 1968, the summer of July 68, Time Magazine does an article on his new business corporate newsletter called The Do Line, which we've been reading and we got to finish that. He says in there, well, people are into hardware, so I'll go along with it. He makes his casual statement, well, people are into rearview mirror stuff. So I'll go along with it. So he's pretending he's just a casual guy who's will continue being boring because everybody else is doing it, while trying to wake everybody up.
Yeah.
There's a quote where he says, "I can't.
So
wait.
Elegant.
It's been very, very busy the last couple weeks. I can't wait to get bored again." That's another statement he makes.
So elegant, isn't it?
Yeah. Or what he says in Woody Allen. No one ever said this. He criticizes the professor who's trying to explain him, and he says, "You think my whole fallacy is wrong." Whoever says that what they're about is a fucking fallacy. See, this is radical.
Oh, it's so good.
And he still gets the Order of Canada. Well, there's a lot of protests. He actually was, his Project 69 in 1960-61 about rudiments of media ecology, which became Understanding Media, is debated in Congress and lashed out at it. How can we fund such nonsense? Somebody was probably some conservative was complaining that the National Association of Education Broadcasters got this fucked up Canadian to write a report. It actually became an issue in Congress. And then you have in 69, I think it was the Governor General, some guy in Canada, says we've got to put a stop to this McLuhan guy. He's stirring up the kids. He's causing him. He's a terrorist. Basically, accusing him of being a terrorist. And all he was a apparently staid old professor, English professor at the University of Toronto. But it's because of what he was saying was beyond propriety? Being decent? What's that word?
Yeah.
Propriety, yeah. It was beyond sane. And, you know, if it wasn't for me, you fuckers would... these are fragments said here and there. You have to read a lot or see a lot to find out he said it. There's this fantastic footage of him at York University about 1970. He's talking to some guy in a TV studio, some professor, and he has the most ridiculous wig on. Badly positioned. Badly faked. He's so stupid. And he's sitting there like he's oblivious to how he looks. Which fits into what he was. He says he's not a visual person.
Yeah.
He's not caring. He's not caring about what the eyeball sees. And then I think Chad and I have talked about it around the same time. And this is after his agent, Mady Molinaro, comes on board and starts saying, "You got to improve your image," and starts making suggestions, told him to get a mustache or something. So I think that's why he put this stupid toupee on. But there's another one where he's on this TV show, and he has these weird glasses where he can flip the lens up. The overlaying lens goes up and down. So he will be looking at some pictures of his art, and then the guy then would, this famous Canadian interviewer would ask him something, so he'd flip the fucking lens up and then answer. And then so he put on different lenses while talking or reviewing. You know what I mean? Different environments. Different things.
Put on a different performance. Lens. What a good
yeah, you'd never see anybody do that on TV. Wow. Have this thing and adjust the fucking. You try to make your glasses not even be noticed. He's really trying to make you notice what he's doing.
Bob, what would be after I read Baudrillard? What would be the next McLuhan book that I should read in reaction to that?
Well, everybody has to read Through the Vanishing Point. That's the beautiful.
I've read
book.
That. Yeah, I've read that.
Oh, well, then you read Take Today. The
okay.
Executive is Dropout.
Okay.
Yep. And any other book, but just if you...
Yeah, any of them. Yeah, okay.
And so what did you think of Through the Vanishing Point?
Oh, it was amazing. I wish I had a copy in front of me. It's just such a beautiful... I mean, just as an artist, it's great to just even think about it analytically, you know, what the three-dimensional thing would be doing to everything. It's just really... Yeah,
I guess it blew Roxy's mind.
The word of the night is elegant. The word of the night is elegant.
Yes,
it's
a beautiful book. Yeah. It's a specially produced series. They have all these other famous writers.
Yeah.
The name of the series. But it's
yeah, that woman
these,
organized
these,
it. Mm-hmm.
Ruth somebody.
Yeah, Ruth.
But here's the thing. Roxy, that would be right up her avenue. She's an art student, studied history of art, goes to museums. She read that book and it blew her mind because it was in the context of art. And she says, "Holy shit, I never realized that artists were responding to their environment." We're taught that, oh, there's originality, there's genius, there's some, you know, inky-dinky, unconscious, something that I would say, black, deep unconscious that's making you be a genius. And she says, holy fuck, these environments made the perspective happen. Printing press made Renaissance. Like,
yeah.
Just that simple effect. It changed her life and her perceptions when she
right.
saw that. And yeah, it's amazing what people don't know, that something that's sort of, for me, pretty obvious now,
right.
It never occurred to her. So it's really important. This is a person who's very smart, learned a lot. If
right.
that can alter someone like Roxy, then that book's important.
Yeah, and it's interesting to consider, you know, any sort of trends post that book in terms of art and how you see how it, you know,
yeah.
reflects the environment. Like you guys were doing the Carolyn Gorton book, and she was bringing up a lot of the artists in there and showing
yeah,
the environmental. Yeah, it's cool to see McLuhan put a stake in the ground and make this really amazing, elegant, beautiful claim. The poetry I thought was really beautiful as well. Like, so we see it on the visual plane, but to then
you see it in the poetry,
hear it, see it
in the poetry of the era.
Yeah, it's so great that he brings in, you know, not just the painting, which is so obvious.
Yeah,
and he's bringing in all that other stuff too. So, my family just got here, so I have to go.
Who's the guy that I know that did the book Bad Boy? Eric Fischel. It's interesting to read Eric Fischel's book because he doesn't know the McLuhan. He's wrestling with what he should do in art, and he's up against the other things and all the effects of the 80s Android meme. So you look
right.
at his story as an example of what McLuhan's saying. They're responding to the technology of the day and trying to figure out where to go with painting. So
yeah,
he gives to.
What's that book?
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
It's called Bad Boy.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
that's
bye,
a famous painting. Okay, thanks a lot for your contribution.
Thank you, Bob. Talk to
okay.
you soon. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Now, looks like Katie dropped off. Oh, maybe I should renew my thing here. Let's see. No, it's, everybody's here. Nobody's here. Well, hardly anybody. So who's going to speak? I'm blocked in an anonymous. I don't think why anybody should have left. That was a very important conversation we had.
Was that
still on the air, Bob?
Point?
Okay. Say that again?
Was that Vanishing Point you said the name of the book?
Yeah, Through the Vanishing Point. And it's subtitled Space in Poetry and Painting. I think it was called Space in Poetry and Painting. So, are you going to say anything, Madeline?
I'm trying to. I think you got me muted.
No, you're not muted.
Oh.
Are you?
Okay.
Let me just fix
are we
this
on the air?
Okay. Yes. We are. On the air.
You extended the hours of the show, or did I have my time?
No. We go from three in my terms, 3 to 5. In your terms, 6 to 8.
Oh, okay. I thought I had called in just at the last stop of the second.
No.
Well, I missed the first hour.
Okay. Do you have anything you want to talk about?
Not now.
Well, make something up. Come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
Well, all you have to do is remember something you thought the other day. Sure. I don't know which person. Is that you? Are you outside, Madeline?
I am.
What did I do? Oh, I'm pressing the wrong thing here. What is this? Okay, Madeline, you're not muted.
Bob, I muted myself because I'm outside.
Okay, yeah, that's where that wind is coming. Okay, that's okay. If we can make out, I was going to mute someone else. I didn't know if they were making it. So, yeah, say something. Look, what do you, you walk around with no fucking thoughts.
Well,
bullshit.
All right.
You get all kinds of thoughts.
No, yes, I have far too many thoughts. I have
all right.
Full of thoughts.
Yeah, speak of
well,
you.
So I was listening to the most recent one, which was really good. It's so funny. I was saying it deep. I like the paydays without Ion better. it's just, I mean, you speak, well, you don't like to say you do, but you speak English. I don't know what the fuck the language
yes.
Ion talks.
That's right.
So, you were going down a rabbit hole, and I was chuckling to myself, hearing Ion's voice saying, like, there goes Bob, taking him down a well.
That's right.
And after that, when the show ended, I just randomly picked an hour from the previous show, and it happened to be one where Ion was talking about exactly that, and and you called it a sidebar. Like, we're not, like, the, you're holding up all of Ascension because we've got to get through all these sidebars.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Ion came up with that word. He
but
called
I was
it sidebar.
Thinking...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I thought it was great. It's like, well, I have felt in my own personal experience that it's like all the, well, all my shit is very much up to be acknowledged and addressed and whatever. It's like all the stuff I've got to get over before I can experience my ascended state.
Right.
And it's sort of like that collectively. It's not that we're... It's like a choice to really explore everything we've gotten ourselves into before we release it, or, you know...
Before we die.
Yeah.
Before we kill ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a collective whistling in the dark. You know, this is part of Manipian satire. Is that,
it's more
that,
than that.
That is,
nah, whistling in the dark, isn't that what you do to keep, like, the monsters at bay?
Yes, I think that's what's happening.
This is,
and
this
people,
is not... Oh, you think it's that? See, I think it's flipping the light switches and looking at them.
Well, it's a paradox. It's what exploration is. It's what living in time is. We create this fallen state, and we enjoy it, and every now and then get scared of it, but we can't stop it. And that's
yeah.
The essence of Manipian satire is endless digression. You know, take some guy who's trying to tell you something, but he can't tell you. It's like Ion. I see Ion sometimes as he can't talk about what he tells me and Carolyn. Because there are people listening, and we have to keep a secret. So he spends a lot of time digressing all this different stuff, and you guys get frustrated because he doesn't give you a point. You guys don't get practical, anything practical out of it, unless you start focusing on it, which I'm telling you to do, and start inventing something, and then you'll maybe make him focus. But it's like Ion's endlessly avoiding and evading, talking about what he would like to talk about, but can't. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, sure. So, there's... Yeah.
And I find it... I'll give Ion this. He's really good at creating significance out of sidebars. And you can learn a lot, and should learn a lot from it. But there is a level of people will demand, you know, deal with my fucking issues, tell me what I should do, give me something to do, and what are you actually doing? You know, you're just talking a lot. You know, that I can see the frustration with that. But if you're smart, you won't let that get you in your way. You'll keep listening. Because there's many times he says things and I think you know about this, that are for me and Carolyn, that we know the context of, and you guys won't know. Or if you think you know, it's probably not accurate what you think it's for. But he does, as a joke, put out stuff on payday that has great significance for us. Okay, Madeline, what do you say next?
Nothing.
Well, the sidebar.
I mean, yeah. What is
okay,
the...
so I'm there trying to create sidebars and trying to get you to help create a sidebar. So what did you get from that? Okay, Bob was taking us down a rabbit hole, and then you saw Ian talking about it in another show. Anything else about the rabbit hole I took you down?
It just... You know, I don't think I can articulate it. It was my own little, it has significance
well,
to me, but not necessarily.
Well, you said you liked it.
You definitely
you
create
it.
Your... I did. Very much.
Yeah.
It was, mirroring sort of my own experience of living.
Yeah.
As does, you know, I mean, everything. It's like the world is all about you. It's also all about me.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
You just can't. You can't get anybody to pay attention to your world. I can get people to pay attention to the fact
it's
all about me.
I don't want them to. I don't want an empire. I don't. Yeah. I don't
want
to be.
Well, that's where you're. That's where you're not ascending. You're going to have to want an empire when you ascend. See, it's you're limiting
yeah,
yourself.
I don't want to. I don't want to be the damn queen. I don't want.
It doesn't
you know, I don't want
well,
that.
Well, see, there you go. Projecting an obsolete image on what you think empire is. Yeah, but you don't
okay,
know if
good.
That's what an empire that is. You're projecting cliche ideas about what the word empire means to you.
I'm getting straight by Bob. Great. Good. Thank you.
You're getting what?
So
did you say straight?
Do you want to play
you're
with...
getting straight?
Thanks.
What'd you say you were
you,
getting done by Bob? What is Bob doing to you? What was that verb?
Spanking. Christ. Spanking.
Do
I'm
some
in
great.
The store yelling the word spanking over and over again.
Oh, spanking. Okay. Even Carolyn came over and looked at me puzzled. What's she saying? Yeah, spanking. Yeah, you're getting spanked. Yes, you're. See, this is the point.
So,
you have to stay
so
around
how do I
and
look
be told.
Empire?
Yeah, you have to stay around and be told by Ion
I mean,
that your images of what you think the words mean is not accurate. You. The point is,
so
that you
I can
should
be the self ruler of my.
I don't know, but you certainly don't want to say I don't want an empire. You don't say, I don't want an empire. You say, I want an empire, and then see
okay.
how it comes to you.
Okay.
Because, you know, if another part of being a god, in ascending, is you're going to be able to raise the dead every day. Have you raised anybody lately? No. Well, that's where you got to get to. And you got to figure out how to get to that point. So you got to really love yourself to start building an empire. Now, what's love yourself mean? How do you do that without being stupid?
Right.
It's a trick. It makes life interesting. You have no clue, and nobody has a clue about what they should be doing. And they should be checking out things to find out, well, maybe I can get a clue.
Well, the thing, I
and
think
I,
there's no, is there a should?
And people act like they should, so it's really real. It's a meme. So make it part of your being. They absorb all memes and have a really good should thing going on in yourself, as well as the non-should. You know, Quadrophenia, you're doing many different things.
That's actually something else that did occur to me was the rules that you sort of, you make them up as you go, and you follow them for a time until it's not
yeah.
serving you, and then you just you change the whole rule and do that.
Right.
So
yeah.
there are shoulds, but they're
their dynamic.
Right. The Church of Subgenius calls them short-term durational saviors, something like that. Short-term saviors. Okay. In the information overload environment, people have all kinds of short-term saviors that they've gone through. Different teachers, different interests. The variety of people live is incredible compared to older societies. At least in recorded history, there may be societies where people were doing things without technology that was quite diverse and various. They used the mystery landscape a lot more. But within normal imageries of our experience, the complexity people live today compared to 100 years ago is pretty amazing. I mean, it was radical to drop your religion. Now people have different religions every 2 years. Different enthusiasms for their so-called spiritual life. Right, Madeline? Are you still there?
Yes, I'm muting because of ambient noise. But yeah.
Okay. Oh, Chad's back. Were you going to say something, Chad?
No, I got cut off, so I'm just back on. I just heard the last, 30 seconds with the short-duration personal savior.
Yeah, you remember that. Yeah, short-duration personal savior. That. But the... I was asking you to comment on something, but you weren't there. I don't know what that was. What do you think of Zappa stuff? Did you hear? Yeah. Did you have any comment on that?
I've read that before, and I think we talked about it in Lacuna on Maui 33, even with Ion, and Ion talked about the importance of putting a frame on your composition, having a starting point, and then working within a frame, and then you require those two elements to create things.
Right. Well, that's interesting. I forgot about that.
I don't remember if that was Ion or if it was McLuhan through Ion.
No, that's not. I don't recall McLuhan saying something like that. But maybe. Well, you know, the show's going to end in a few minutes, so stay on the line. I'll talk a few minutes after that. Doesn't have to end at the top of the hour. So if you come up with something to say. So that Putney Swope and Greaser's Palace, Mulholland Drive. You know those movies, Madeline? You might be interested in how we analyze
them. Mulholland Drive, I've seen. I don't think the other.
You weren't listening when Kate was doing it.
That's correct, I was not.
You might want to hear that. Since you like the non-ionic portions of Iondom, you might like what we said the first hour. So check it out in the archives. Well, Chad, say something, Chad.
My brain is on fire right now. I'm reading these articles about quantum computing, and I keep getting these questions to write down for Ion later. But anyway, multitasking.
Right.
Bad, Chad.
That's good.
I mean, right now, I'm 100% on this. Everything that I'm hearing on here, I'm filtering through the quantum stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it'd be interesting to talk about Zappa's concept of the big note and just the idea of quantum physics and how, especially with the qubits in the computer, how apparently they occupy multiple states at the same time.
Mm.
It's just a weirdness about quantum physics, and everything comes down to probabilities. Probability that something's going to happen, but it's never necessarily registered at a certain given point.
That's when our will comes in. At this point, the music comes on, you can decide whether you're going to stay after the end of the show or not.